doing?
Sharing more.
Okay. Ready to go, John?
Fire away.
Good evening. This is Saturday night. Welcome again. This is Ray. I'm a abstaining compulsive reader. Hi. Some of the things that we heard today in the groups that were sharing, and somebody brought up the idea of free food. Now, I understand free food. I know where all of the buffets are in the San Fernando Valley, and the food is free. After you buy the first meal, everything from there on is free. So that means that there's no closed end to it. You can eat until the place closes. To get around from that, what I had to do was I had to stop going to buffets, because when I walked in, I always felt if I want to get my money's worth and then some, I've got to eat more. So I was not willing to pay the price. Again, we're back to the same thing. I can eat anything I want in any quantity that I want, any time of the day or night that I want, as long as I'm willing to pay the price. 37 years, one day, I'm not ready to pay the price. So that idea is no longer good. Again, I heard many times fear keeps popping up. I will tell you that in all of the inventories that I did, fear was the greatest single character defect of all. And that's why, of course, I committed to memory, and it's on step 7 in the AA 12 and 12 about fear. It's important to know not only phrase there, but it's important to understand really what it's saying. When it says the chief activator of our character defects is self-centered fear, this told me where the boogeyman was. It was all self-centered there. It was self that, as Dan has said so many times, it's self that led me to thinking that I was doing. I think that I've got a fear problem here. I think this, I think that. Many times I would not, when we were going to go on vacation, I would not fly. And the reason I wouldn't fly is because I was afraid of flying. And what was I afraid of? Well, I was afraid that the pilots may not be up to snuff. They might be drinking. I was afraid that the plane didn't have enough fuel. I was afraid of this, afraid of that, and everything else. And what I had to do was surrender that fear and realize that this was a self-centered fear. I based on nothing else. More people are killed in automobile wrecks than have ever been killed in the airline industry. So I had to understand that once I could determine where the boogeyman was, that it was self-centered fear, and that I could do something about getting rid of it. And that is, it says, living upon a basis of unsatisfied demands, I'd be in a state of continual disturbance and frustration. No peace was to be had or found until we find the means for reducing those demands. Step 1, which is surrender. Step 2, which is faith. Step 3, which is trust. And the fear will vanish. Face the thing I fear the most, and the death of fear is certain. Okay. Health medications. I heard people talking about all the medicines, and some people are a little leery about some of them and what the side effects are, one thing or another. If you're going to a competent doctor and they said, take this, you do it. On that wheel that we drew out, that Dan suggested, again, very good idea, the health spoke was the one that was of greatest concern to me. It was greatest concern to me because at the moment, I'm a very young 77. In November the 9th, I'll be 77. but I have cataracts in my eyes, I have glaucoma coming on, I have macular degeneration there, and in addition to that, I'm a pre-diabetic, I've got that thing hanging off to my throat and my esophagus, and I've got an irregular heartbeat. Aside from that, I'm in pretty good shape there. Now, so what does this mean? It means that I take a lot of pills. And what do I do when I take them? I simply take them and know that they're going to help me because medical science has said that this is what you need to do in order to take the steps you take. So I put drops in my eyes. I put drops in my nose. Somebody said, for you that are non-Jewish, you're going to miss this, but they said, you shove so much stuff up, how much stuff do you shove up your tuchus? But I haven't gotten to that state yet. So the doctor reports, and I always ask the doctor, what is the real story here? I had an upper GI series, and the guy says, you need to swallow this barium. Well, I've heard about palatable medicines that they tell you to drink. But if they have to tell you it's palatable, look out. So I asked the surgeon, I says, what does this stuff really taste like? He says, you know, it's not bad. It tastes a lot like milk and magnesia. It's got that consistency. But if you don't think about it, it won't bother you. With that thought in mind, I faced the thing I feared the most. I drank the barium. I did what they told me to do, and the results were fine. And I can tell you that the barium swallow is not a difficult thing at all. So if you ever have to have it, don't sweat it. Today one of the things we had for lunch was noodles. And I took some, and I thought, oh boy, this looks good. And I didn't touch them after I tried them, because I couldn't get them to swallow. So these are one of the things. So I ran into that, I said, okay, fine, I can't swallow it, so I don't eat that, I'll eat something else. Not a big deal, okay. I was a tough kid to handle. So as a result, they decided that they'd take me to military school, the big Page Military Academy, the big school for little boys, it was called. It's in L.A. And my mom said that we'll take a look around the school, and if you like it, you can stay, and if you don't like it, you can come home. So I thought, well, sounds fair. So I went ahead, and we went to the Page Military Academy, and we looked around the school, and I decided that I didn't like it. I turned around to tell Mom that I didn't like it, and she had left me. I had been abandoned there. And so in future times, my mom used to ask me, because she was unsure, if mother was gone and your grandmother was gone, who would you want back? And it was never my mother. It was always my grandmother. My mother gave me food, shelter, and clothing. My grandmother gave me love. And love is the unconditional acceptance of another human being. Okay. And when she took me to school, she made sure that I was fed very well. They used to have a place called McDonald's, not the same McDonald's that we see with the Golden Arches. It was McDonnells. And it operated much like Kentucky Colonel today. They had the chicken, and they had the fancy bread, and they had all the kind of accoutrements that Kentucky Colonel has. And she gave me that with the idea that we want you to have the things that you want when you go back to school. In other words, we're going to dump you, but we want to try to hide it with the fact that we're feeding you extra good things besides what I was fed at the school. One other thing that comes to mind, and I'm going to make it short because I'm really tired. I was up five times last night, and then I decided to take a nap this afternoon. I was up five times. I got a BPH condition. That's benign prostatic hydroplasia, which means I got an enlarged prostate. So if you're getting older, guys, you can look forward to this. Supposedly it is pretty common in guys. But anyway, I want to end with this thing. Somebody has said to me, you know, Ray, I'd like to offer you some constructive criticism on how you run your life. Now, this is really a stupid statement to make, because construct means to build up and criticize means to tear down. So how do you offer constructive criticism? I don't know. Anyway, I want to close with one other thing here. I want to express my sincere appreciation not only to the committee here that asked me to be a participant with Dan, who I have enjoyed immensely working with. I got very lucky working with Dan. We're extremely compatible. As he says, it's great that I can't hear him snore because I can't hear anything. So that makes it kind of nice. And we knew each other before, but this is the first time that I've had the opportunity to really work with him, and it's been just exactly wonderful and very exciting. And I want to thank you guys so very much for all your help and understanding, all of your good comments, all of the things that you've given me, all the things that I've stolen from you and I make my own. For the 37 years and one day that I now have, and I just want to say thanks an awful lot. OA, I'm not through with it yet, one day at a time. I hope to be here till I hit that age 100. I got a contract with the doctors to age 100 in good health. And if they don't keep it, I'm going to start a lawsuit. So if there's any free attorneys here, I'd be interested in your services. Thanks a lot, guys. Take care. Love you all.
I'm Daniel, compulsive overeater.
Hi.
It's been a privilege with me to be with this man who, when I first met him, scared the shit out of me because of the way he expressed himself, and he was so darn right. And the reason he scared me, because a lot of my stuff that I had in my life, I wasn't really, you know, practicing. So I want to talk to you guys of some of the stuff that I've done in program. 1983, my then sponsor says, you need to go to this meeting out in Gardena. It's a wonderful meeting. There's going to be a great speaker there. And I want you to get there early and sit up front. And I want you to listen to what this man has to say. So I got there being a very obedient pink cloud type of person. And I got there and I sat there. And I think we opened up the meeting with a serenity prayer. So, when I close your eyes, you know, serenity prayer, God grant me the serenity, accept the things I can. I open my eyes, and there's this young man sitting next to me. And I looked, and he just kept looking straight like this. And I looked at him, and so the speaker gets up, and he starts talking. And he's talking some stuff, and some very things were very funny. And I looked at this kid, and this kid was just like this. And I'd smile, hoping to get an acknowledgement from him. And the kid was just like this the whole time. So right away, my judgmental head starts saying, well, you know, what kind of little jackass is this here, you know? I said, well, you know, if he only knew how great this speaker is, he'd appreciate the words that are being said. I mean, this man is trying to save lives here. So the speaker keeps on talking, and I'm trying to make eye contact with this kid, and this kid is refusing to look at me or acknowledge anything that the speaker's saying, and I'm getting pissed off as we go on. To make a long story short, I never heard a damn word the speaker said. I was too busy trying to focus on this little jackass. Why wouldn't? So when we're getting ready to stand up to close up with the Lord's Prayer, somebody hands him a red and white cane. The guy was blind.
My sponsor says, so what you think of the speaker?
I said, I don't know, but I can tell you a lot about this kid. And that has been a very typical pattern of how I've distracted myself in recovery by focusing on other people. In 1992, I was the literature person for the then Westside Pavilion Happy, Joyous, and Free Meeting, otherwise known as the Happy Jewish and Free Meeting, and I was a literature person. And how I got to that meeting was that this cute little blonde girl that I met at Serenity Sunday says, you know, you should come to the Friday night meeting. And I said, well, are you going to be there? She says, oh, yes. Oh, well, I'll be there. We can have dinner before. I said, I'm in love. This is great. So we showed up and we had dinner. And that night it says, we have some service positions available. Who would like to help us out with the literature? Now, these are two suitcases. Well, so I said, you know what? Perfect girl, perfect meeting, great place to eat. I raised up my hand. So I became the literature person, and that girl never came back to that meeting. And I'm stuck with these damn things. So I'm driving this old clunker, and I lived in L.A., but that day I had to be in San Pedro for whatever reason I had to be down there. And I had to be up here on Friday night before 7:30 to set up the literature table. And I'm getting ready to leave San Pedro, and I say, you know what, I haven't had dinner, and I'm not going to have time to have dinner at the food court. I better stop and get something to eat before I take off. So I stopped at Popeye's Chicken. And I ordered the five-piece meal. And I get in there and I order it, and they give it to me, and I take off on this clunker, and I'm trying to make 70, at least 70, or 40, one of the two, whatever fast it would go. And I'm trying to hustle it, and I reach in the bag, and I whip out a chicken leg, and I bite into it, and I almost burn my mouth with third-degree burns. It was so hot. I said, oh shit, I'm never going to make it on time, and I'm not going to finish my dinner, and I got to set up this table. So I'm thinking, what the hell am I going to do? So I'm driving like this, dodging, going in between traffic, and it finally dawns on me, and I grab this drumstick, and I stick it outside the window. Now, at 60 miles an hour, you know, that stuff cools down. And I brought it back in, and this freaking drumstick was nice and cool. I said, my God, I'm a genius, this is amazing. And now I'm driving away. I said, this is really cool. So I reached down, I grabbed a chicken wing, stuck it out the window, and it slipped out of my fingers. And exactly, that's what I said. Oh, I don't know. For all I know, that stupid chicken wing landed on somebody's windshield, but I wanted to slam on the brakes. Because, oh my God, now I arrived at the Westside Pavilion pissed off because instead of five, I had only a four-piece dinner. And for the rest of the day, I set up the table really pissed off because I was missing one goddamn piece that I paid for, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to starve missing that piece. I was at the Downey Community Hospital meeting in 88. And Richie Kay came down to speak. I was a literature person for that one too. And the Downey Community Hospital in those days had very narrow parking spaces, kind of like a Trader Joe parking lot, you know. And there was one spot halfway down the aisle, and there was another car coming this way. And I said, oh no, pal, I have service to do. And I gunned my car, and I made that guy slam his brakes on. And I said, sorry, Charlie, I gotta go do service. And I slammed my car into that parking space, ran downstairs, and I'm over here, and the secretary says, we're waiting for our speaker, he may be kind of late. And I'm setting up my table, and it turns out the person that I cut off was Richie. So I've done my share of dumb things in program, you know, and I'm not proud of them, but that's only typical of how I lived my life before. Now, I was talking about how recovery asks us to change in many ways, and I needed not necessarily to change my food, but to change my attitude towards food And I was talking to some people this afternoon about my association with food. Give you an example. The alcoholic, when he looks at a drink, to him, it's a life-changing experience. It's a vacation in a bottle. It's going to make him forget about the shitty day he had at work. It's going to make him forget about the shitty wife he has at home. It's going to make him forget about a bunch of stuff. But the normal person looks at that drink as just a beverage. The compulsive overeater can do the same thing with food. There's something about receiving that reward that I'm going to sit down and eat, that I can be like a little puppy peeing all over the carpet when I'm going to eat. Because there's a reward factor behind it. This food is going to make me feel loved. It's going to make me feel accomplished. It's going to make me feel calm. It's going to make me feel relaxed. That's my association with food. And that had to be broken. It had to be broken. I had to bring that food the way it was before, well, like when I was a child or even before then. I had to bring it back to its true perspective. What is it? It's fuel. It's nutrition. It's to keep my body going. That's all it's for. It's not a reward. It's not something that I look forward to. It's something that's supposed to happen to my body. And where I lost it was, I started eating for the effect. I started eating for the effect that this food was going to give me that. And that's where I got into problems with that. Now, for a long time, I thought that all I had to do was just cut my food in half and not eat and lose the weight and my problems would be over. Well, unfortunately, it didn't work like that. Because what happens is that nothing changed inside of me. My personality was still the same. I was very dishonest, very self-centered, very egomaniac, and with an inferiority complex. I had all these traits that I had, and I didn't want to let go of those traits. I just wanted to let go of the weight. So I would lose the weight, but those things kept on with me, and I would gain the stuff back. So, as it says in the spiritual experiences, we needed a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from compulsive overeating or alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. I needed a personality change. Now, you may say to yourself, well, Daniel, how can you change yourself? So you have such a beautiful personality. You're right. I agree, and I wrestled with that for a long time. But, you know, the truth is, I had to change. A lot of things I had to change. And one of them was I needed to start facing my stuff while I kept stuffing my face. The other one, I had to start telling the truth and let the chips fall where they may. I love what John said one day when I heard him speak. He said that redefining your absence is not necessarily so, it's more like redefining your honesty. That is so true. You know, I'm number one to blame everything on everyone except my amounts of food. You know, I can say that if you give me an opportunity, I'll have a disease while I'm eating. You know, and I can blame it on medication. I can blame it on hormones. I used to love women that always say, well, I'm hormonal this month. I said, oh, I can't do that. So one day I did share that at the meeting. I said, I'm hormonal. You should have seen the looks I got from those women. What the hell's wrong with you? So I'm hormonal. Don't oppress me. I have a right to be hormonal. I just don't want to feel. I just don't want to feel. So, this afternoon, we worked on the list of the things and the areas that I have control over, that I have problems with. We worked on the wheel. I'm sorry if I confused you with the spokes. Sorry about that, Steve. But, you know, we needed to know what the center of that wheel is, which is the strongest part of it. And then we went ahead and we wrote down what the three questions were. What am I eating about? Who am I eating for? And do I accept my compulsive overeating as a disease? And lastly, if I could tell anything to anyone, what would I say to them? I think that's a very profound thing to do, because there are a lot of us have gone through losses, have gone through tragedies, have gone through all sorts of uncountable life experiences that we never did deal with, and we just stuffed them down with food. Okay? And that's the stuff we need to bring up in order to heal it and get it out of the way. So it's going to take some time, so maybe many of you guys will do this when you do go home. You know, and you'll write about this and talk to your sponsor about this, but by all means, don't keep it to yourself. Give it to somebody else. Okay, this is very important. Now, I was talking about my higher power this afternoon, just to a member here, I no longer get into the theological debate, and I don't care what your higher power is in that, but here's what works for me. My higher power is this person that stands in front of me every morning after I make conscious contact with him, where I set myself in a higher plane, and he rolls out this mat in front of me, and my job is to walk on that mat. Whether I have to walk over it, but for 24 hours, I have to walk through that mat. The following day, the same person shows up, puts another mat, rolls it in front of me, and I'm supposed to walk through that. And whatever happens on that mat today was meant to be. That's too friggin' simple. But that's the way it's been working for me. I don't see this person, I don't know this person, but this is how he functions every day in my life. And when I'm willing to walk this mat, you know what? Good things happen. I find myself happy. I find myself serene. I find myself grateful. I find myself abstinent. Now, sometimes I don't want to want that mat, and I'll jump to the side, and then I'll go on my own little path. And I do like the turtle. I say, you know, help me, Mr. Wizard. You know, I start doing that number because I get into trouble. So I really don't know how your higher power works in all of this, but this is what this higher power is doing for me every day of my life. And I don't understand. But the mat only goes for 24 hours. It doesn't extend that. That's as far as it goes. Dr. Paul in the acceptance chapter. He says, now what am I going to do about it? When I stopped living in the problem and began living in the answer, the problem went away. From that moment on, I have not had a single compulsion to drink or to eat. And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I'm disturbed, it's because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me. And I find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it's supposed to be at this moment. That's the key. At this moment. Subject to change. But at this moment, that's the way it's supposed to be. Now you leave it up to a control freak like me, I want to make that moment now and change it. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept my life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to change, not needs to be changed in the world, as to what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes. That's where it had to change for me, in my attitudes, in me. When I find someone irritating me, there's usually something going on with me. When food is calling out to me more than what it should, there's something going on with me. Because food is just the symptom, it's not the cause. I like to answer my feelings with food, but it's just a symptom, you know. And this is the stuff that I've had a hard time with, because you got to understand, if I don't do it, who will? So if I trust this God that's putting up this mat in front of me every day for 24 hours, and I walk that mat, and I'm willing to trust, good things come out of it. But if I don't, I pay the price of it. So acceptance is acknowledgement. Acceptance is approval of whatever condition my family may be in. Whatever they're doing, that's where they're supposed to be. You know, and that kind of makes it kind of difficult. Because all my expectations of what things should be are out the window. You know. Perhaps the best thing of all for me is to remember that my serenity is inversely proportional to my expectations. The higher my expectations of Max, Dr. Paul's wife, and other people are, the lower my serenity. I can watch my serenity level rise when I discard my expectations. Serenity level, I can watch my serenity level rise when I describe my expectations, but when my rights try to move in, and they try, and they too can force my serenity level down, and I have to discard my rights as well as my expectations by asking myself, how important really is it? How important? And do you know what? A lot of my battles that I've had in life were not really that important. I thought they were. I thought I had to make that decision right now. Do you realize how many times I slept on the sofa being correct? Rather than happy with this much sticking off of the soles of my feet? When I could have been happy in bed. But I was going to show her. How important is it really? You know, how important is it really that I carry this gunny sack full of resentments, full of things that have happened, that I just use it to hurt myself? I walk around with my head, with people living in my head rent-free. You know, and it's not fair. How important is it compared to my serenity, my emotional sobriety? And when I place more value on my serenity and sobriety than anything else, I can maintain them at a higher level, at least for the time being. At least for the time being. And this is what awaits me when I leave here tomorrow. I've got the same shit I left when it's going to be there waiting for me. How am I going to deal with it? Am I going to deal with it the way I left? Flipping them off? You know? I'm going to get recovery! You know, and I flip them off. Or is my attitude going to change? Now, the big book is really good at saying, for there's one ultimate authority, a loving God is me, express himself. Right? It also says that God could and would if he were sought. Now, my God, that you find him now. And I don't know what it's going to take for you to find your higher power if you do have a higher power. Or what's it going to take for you to understand that there has to be an attitude change? You know, I'm not the same guy I was 5 years ago. I'm not the same guy I was 10 years ago. Things have changed. You know, I'm willing to accept things a lot quicker today than before. And I find myself being happier. Do things get on my nerves? Yes. Yes. Shit happened to me? Oh yeah. But I don't go over back to the food anymore though. I don't lash out at people anymore either. You know, I'm not that quick to get mad. I've learned to surrender in order to win. I was outside this afternoon and I saw this little thing move and it caught my eye. And it's a baby lizard, about this big, about an inch. And I'd never seen him that small. So I put my hand on it, and it's trying to wriggle its way and think I'm going to eat it. I was about to eat it, that's not on my food plan. And I finally grabbed it, and when I grabbed it, it just froze, and it just went like this. And it surrendered to me. It was going to go where I was going to take it. I put it on my palm. I took it over to Steve. Look at this, a baby lizard. It had no choice but to go where I was going to take it. And I believe our higher power, if we surrender, is going to take us where he wants us to go. This is what it's all about. I'm here to say to God, God, I've really mucked up my life. I've done a mess of it. Please take it. Take me along with everything that I've done and you fix it. Because I'm making a decision to turn my will and my life over to a care of God because I understand that. You know? And all I'm asking is for the knowledge of his will and how to carry that out. God is not my Santa Claus. I don't write lists to them. He's not my negotiator. I just say, your will be done. Not mine. That's as far as I can go with it. And for 24 hours, God will be with me.
I don't know about tomorrow, but just for today. You know, so just think today. If you lived in the present today, what gifts did you receive from God today? Think about it. What did you get from God today? This is as good as it got. See, if you're waiting for a reward to happen on Friday or on Saturday, you know, you're not going to be out of luck because our expectations are too great. But if you live one day at a time, you're going to see a lot of things happen in life that you never saw before. That's what's happened to me. So I need to know that. And that's why I need you guys, because all my attempts to stay abstinent, all my attempts to stay in program, I fail miserably. But when I do it with you guys, I succeed. I succeed. Because it's a we program, not a me program. See, it's a we program. So whether you're a newcomer in this program, or whether you're a seasoned dinosaur, or you've gotten stale, whatever it is, we all have the capacity to breathe in us new life to start it again for 24 hours only. That's all I ask. Thank you for letting me share.
Back to you, Steve. You got it.